The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Money.com and also Kiplinger Personal Finance. Our first article today from Money.com is entitled, The Three Best Money Moves in June 2023. As the summer's heating up, June ushers in a sense of relaxation and carefree vibes. Amid the backyard barbecues and family road trips, it's easy to let your finances take a back seat. The good news is that we're here to help you think about your finances so you don't have to. In this month's installment of Money Moves, we'll explain why now is a great time to open a certificate of deposit account, what to watch for as the Supreme Court decides the fate of President Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness program, and finally, how to prepare for hurricane season. Here's what's on the docket for June. Number one, open a certificate of deposit CD account before rates drop. Right now, interest rates for many certificate of deposit CD accounts at banks and credit unions are sitting at levels unseen since the early aughts, with many institutions offering rates above 5%. A CD account is a type of FDIC-insured savings account with a fixed term and a fixed interest rate, making it a safe choice for savers looking to grow their money. Terms are as short as 3 months, but also may extend up to 10 years. CD's attractive rates can be attributed to the Federal Reserve's 10 consecutive interest rate hikes in its battle against inflation. Frank Newman, a portfolio manager at Ally Bank, recently explained to Money that CD rates tend to follow the trend of benchmark interest rates set by the Fed. They go up when rates rise and down when rates fall. But here's the catch. The golden era of high CD rates might be on the verge of fading away. Ken Turman, the founder of the banking advice site DepositAccounts.com, suggests that the chances of the Fed hiking interest rates again in June are dwindling. This means that the window of opportunity to secure a low-risk interest-bearing account may be closing soon. So, before rates start to drop, consider opening a CD account to lock in those sky-high rates. Number two, watch for the Supreme Court's decision on student loan forgiveness. Since last November, when legal challenges to President Biden's student loan forgiveness program shut down applications, 43 million borrowers have been waiting with bated breath to learn whether forgiveness is actually going to happen. Later this month, the Supreme Court will finally deliver the highly anticipated answer, potentially changing the finances of millions of borrowers. If the Supreme Court rules in favor of the Biden administration, federal student loan borrowers who earn less than $125,000 per year are eligible for up to $10,000 of forgiveness. Borrowers who received a need-based Pell Grant while in college are eligible for up to $20,000. Tied to the Supreme Court ruling is the resumption of monthly student loan payments, either 60 days after the court's ruling or by August the 30th, whichever is sooner. The payment pause that has been in effect since March of 2020 will officially come to an end. Many borrowers are in a wait-and-see mode in anticipation of the Supreme Court's decision. However, unless your remaining balance would be totally wiped away from Biden's plan, and that plan is approved, then you're going to have to start repayments anyway. Experts say there are several ways you can prepare for student loan payments to resume, like right now. Options include checking your loan balance, choosing a repayment plan, starting a budget, and exploring what other forgiveness or federal assistance options you may be eligible for. Number three, prepare for hurricane season. This one's for all the folks who live on the eastern seaboard. Hurricane season officially starts June 1, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, predicts as many as 17 named storms, including up to 4 major hurricanes with winds of at least 111 miles per hour. The agency says this season is, quote, near normal. Don't let that tame-sounding rating lull you into complacency. In 2012, NOAA predicted only one major hurricane, and that year, Superstorm Sandy, nonetheless, ravaged several counties and countries and northeastern states. Many Americans are still recovering from last year's devastating Hurricane Ian and Ida from 2021 as well. Suffice to say, a bit of planning now can go a long way. For starters, you should make a hurricane preparedness kit. If you don't have one already, that includes necessities like cash, phone chargers, blankets, flashlights, batteries, a radio, canned foods, water, a first aid kit, and toiletries. Additionally, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security recommends compiling a financial first aid kit ahead of any storms that contain important financial and legal documents of everyone in your household, such as copies of IDs, birth certificates, and Social Security cards. You'll also want to wrangle up contact information for various insurance companies, homeowners insurance, flood insurance, private mortgage insurance, and health insurance, to name just a few. That you would need to contact if you or a family member was hurt or if your property was damaged by a storm. This is also a good time to make sure you understand what your policies cover and whether you need to consider upgrading or adding to them. While getting a new insurance policy can take time, making changes to an existing one is usually a quicker process. For example, check your homeowner's insurance for its hurricane deductible, which is likely to be different than the regular one for your policy. Then make sure it's low enough to provide peace of mind. If you're just getting started with a hurricane prep, all of this may sound a little overwhelming. Just know that it becomes much easier to maintain over the years once you've got your base kit preparations ready. And our next article from Money.com. Some Social Security recipients will get two payments in June. Heads up. Some recipients of Social Security benefits will get paid twice in June, but there's no reason to worry. The schedule is a little different than usual this summer. Payments for Supplemental Security Income, a program for certain Americans 65 and up, as well as qualified adults and children with disabilities or blindness, will go out on the first and the last day of June. You'll still get your full benefits if you receive SSI, but the Social Security Administration will distribute two payments this month and none in July. The next payment after that will go out August 1, according to this year's SSA calendar. When will I get my Social Security check? Recipients of Social Security retirement, disability, and survivor's benefits are typically paid on the second, third, and fourth Wednesdays of each month, depending on the beneficiary's birth dates. SSI payments usually go out on the first of the month, But if the date falls on a weekend or federal holiday, payments are moved to the previous business day. The regular SSI payment schedule then starts again the following month. Since July 1st falls on a Saturday this year, SSI recipients will get their June checks on Thursday, June 1, and their July checks on June 30th. The same thing happened in March, and SSI recipients can also expect two payments in September and also December. As such, there will be no SSI payments distributed in October or January. If you receive both Social Security and SSI, or if you claimed benefits before May 1997, you generally get your regular Social Security payment on the third of the month and SSI on the first. For June, the Social Security benefits will be paid on Friday. Spouses and children getting someone else's benefits are paid on the same day as the main beneficiary. Will the debt ceiling deal delay my Social Security payment? You may have heard officials like Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warn of a delay in government benefit payments if the U.S. Congress and White House don't agree on a deal to raise the debt limit before the June 5th deadline. Of course, at the time of this recording, the Senate has now passed a bill late last Thursday evening to suspend the nation's debt limit through January the 1st of 2025, averting a first-ever U.S. default just days ahead of the deadline. In a letter sent to congressional leaders last week, Yellen said that a failure to raise the debt ceiling would leave government coffers dangerously depleted, falling $130 billion plus in benefit payments to veterans, Social Security, and Medicare in the first 2 days of June. A default would leave the Treasury with inadequate resources to make $92 billion in payments and transfers scheduled for later in the month. However, legislation is now poised to pass before the Monday deadline that would raise the debt ceiling and avoid a default, so beneficiaries probably have nothing to fret. And again, just noting, at the time of this recording, the Senate has now passed a bill to suspend the nation's debt limit through January 1 of 2025. So that concern should not be currently present. What if I don't get my payment? If you don't receive your benefits as expected, wait 3 business days before calling the SSA on a weekday between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m., and you can reach them at 1-800-772-1213. The SSA has a payment schedule that you can refer to, or you can view your benefit status by creating or logging in to your Social Security online account under Benefits and Payments. Our next article from Money.com, here's how low gas prices could go this summer. Almost a year ago, gas prices reached a record high of over $5 per gallon. While prices could very well rise in the months ahead, experts say the national average isn't likely to pass $4 this summer. The average gallon of gas in the U.S. now costs $3.55, which is 2.7 cents more than a week ago, according to Gas Buddy. The price comparison app forecast in a new report that the national average will hover between $3.35 and $3.85 during the warm months. That means the average cost for gas could rise by about 30 cents per gallon. But prices are not expected to shoot up in the near term, nor should they come anywhere near the record highs of last summer. Gasoline prices have drifted higher in the last week due to some relatively minor refinery kinks and low gasoline supply, but it may not be a trend that lasts too much longer, says Patrick DeHaan, Gas Buddy's head of petroleum analysis. What experts are saying, Increased demand for gas around the holiday may have caused prices to rise during the Memorial Day holiday, according to Andrew Goss, a spokesperson for the Auto Club AAA. But he said in a recent report that prices could stabilize or fall once the Memorial Day weekend is over and in the rearview mirror. However, later in the summer, gas could get more expensive if oil prices rise. That's a possibility if Congress passes a debt ceiling deal or if a recession starts to appear less likely, according to Gas Buddy. The idea is that positive economic news like this would signal higher oil demand, potentially leading to higher oil and gas prices. Other hypotheticals, like gasoline demand being higher than expected this summer, or weather events impacting refineries, could lead to higher prices. Crude oil, which accounts for 51% of what you pay for in a gallon of gas, was trading just below $70 per barrel on Tuesday, down about $6 in the past month, according to the West Texas Immediate Measure. Where gas prices are the highest and the lowest. Gas prices are more than $1 lower than they were at the same time last year when the national average was $4.60, and on a rise towards a record high just above $5 in June. While gas prices have only been this high a few times in the past decade, today's cost may feel less shocking to drivers who've been paying high prices for more than a year at this point, going back to Russia's invasion of Ukraine in early 2022. As always, what you pay for gas depends a lot on where you're filling up. State-to-state differences in gas taxes and fees are among the reasons that prices tend to vary widely. The average price of gas is currently below $3 in just one state, Mississippi, while the highest 10% of stations in the U.S. have an average price of $4.73 per gallon, according to Gas Buddy. The most expensive states for gas right now are California at $4.77, Hawaii at $4.71, Washington at $4.60, Arizona $4.47, and Nevada $4.21. And the five cheapest states are Mississippi at $2.96, Louisiana at $3.09, Texas at $3.09, Arkansas at $3.12, and Alabama at $3.14. Our next article is from Kiplinger's Personal Finance. This is an article written by Emma Patch. Are you guilty of financial infidelity? Nearly one in four Americans are keeping money-related secrets from their partners, according to a recent survey by Bankrate. That could mean hiding anything from a spending splurge to having a secret credit card, bank accounts, or debt. For millennials and Gen Zers, financial infidelity is even more common. Nearly two-thirds of Gen Zers and more than half of millennials in married or live-in relationships admit to having kept a financial secret from their current partner at some point, compared with 29% of Gen Xers and baby boomers. Having it both ways. While less than 20% of Gen Xers and boomer couples keep their finances separate, 43% of Gen Z and 31% of millennial couples maintain separate finances, according to Bankrate. Even if you prefer having a separate account, consider setting up a Yours, Mine, and Ours accounts, said Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst for Bankrate. Under this arrangement, each partner has some money, either a percentage of each paycheck or a certain dollar amount, that is theirs alone. In addition, the couple sets up a joint account for shared expenses, such as housing cost. Beyond that, both partners agree to discuss any withdrawals from the joint account that exceed a set amount. For example, Any purchase over $200 from the hours account needs to be discussed first. The parameters you choose will vary depending on your budget and your preferences. This method of sharing and separating simultaneously is especially popular among Gen Zers and millennials, Rossman says. Alternatively, if you'd rather keep all of your finances separate, consider divvying up expenses in terms of spending categories. For example, one partner might cover housing costs, such as mortgage or rent, while the other covers groceries and utilities. You may also want to allocate expenses based on each of your salaries. Hashing out your finances may not come easily, especially when it comes to spending and debt. There's still a fair amount of stigma and shame when it comes to the subject of debt. Most people would rather discuss their weight, religion, or political views than talk about how much money they owe, according to a survey from creditcards.com. But even if you choose to have separate accounts and finances, will be affected by the amount of debt that you bring into the relationship. Your secret debt may be discovered when you and your partner apply for a car loan, a mortgage, or even an apartment rental, because in those situations, both parties' credit reports are often checked. It may also be difficult to talk about spending. I think budgeting is really stressful for couples, and I think part of the reason for that is that everyone comes to the relationship with a different experience with money, and everyone handles that experience differently, says Sam Gorlick, managing financial planner for Brunch and Budget, a financial coaching and planning firm. When discussing spending with your partner, she says, avoid framing the conversation in a way that suggests you're criticizing the other person's spending habits or looking over their shoulder. Focus instead on asking yourselves what you want to accomplish together, such as buying a house, having a child, or saving for your child's education. For my partner and me, communicating early and often about our finances has proven to be key in maintaining sound financial habits. When we have something to discuss, we often pair the task with an activity, such as going for a walk or out for coffee, which makes it a little more fun. Gorlick recommends setting up a regular time to discuss finances and suggests keeping the discussions short and sweet. When you spend 45 minutes to an hour talking about finances together, things get more emotional regardless of how you feel about all of it, she says. If you keep it short, she adds, you can usually keep the conversation civil and productive. Our next article is from Kiplinger Personal Finance as well, and it is an article by Janet Bodner entitled, For Retirees, Money Isn't Everything. In my April Living in Retirement column, readers weighed in with their advice on how to cook up a secret sauce for financially secure retirement. But many of you pointed out that when it comes to a satisfying retirement, money isn't everything. Retirement should not be based on a spreadsheet and numbers only, writes Avery Youngblood. If you're sitting at an eight-hour-a-day job, you can't provide care for your elderly mother or help your adult child through a divorce or care for a grandchild. I could have worked longer, but being there when my family needed me was more valuable than having more in my 401k. A number of readers made the point that social interaction is critical to happiness in retirement. We are financially secure, so our focus has been on relationships at home and in our community, writes Doug Bross. Our true wealth comes from the strength of those relationships. Having a sense of purpose is also another key factor. The financial part of retiring, albeit very important, is, in my opinion, only half the equation, says Ralph Nappy. I've been retired for 6 years. And the best advice I have heard is, you need to retire to something, not from something. Reader John Napo agrees that doing something meaningful like volunteering is rewarding and advises finding something that makes you feel like you're making a difference in your community. Napo is a volunteer with AARP's Tax Aid program. Along those lines, Dave Lee thinks giving should be added to the secret sauce recipe. We believe that tithing and giving are important, writes Lee. This is a way of acknowledging that our lives and efforts are part of a larger tapestry far beyond what we ourselves can see and control. Health matters. Also on the list of ingredients is a healthy lifestyle. Reader Terry Ortadel offers a checklist. Choose healthy foods, learn to cook, enjoy exercising or walking several days a week, manage your body weight, and develop a health support team to utilize regularly. And while you're at it, develop healthy habits for managing expenses. Another reader recommends having a plan, a bucket list, and a to-do list for daily and long-term activities. That means planning vacations years in advance, keeping in mind health requirements. Stay healthy or healthier than you've ever been. Reader Cynthia Manessa suggests another category for our list. Raise your children to be financially independent adults so that you are not in the position of supporting them instead of retiring. Our sons are in their late 20s, both married, both homeowners, both employed in jobs they enjoy. Both contribute the annual maximum to their 401k plans, and neither carries credit card debt. I retired at 59, and my husband at 62. It was gratifying to hear from so many readers who credited Kiplinger's with helping them achieve a retirement with no regrets. Read Kiplinger's All Your Life, advises Earl Luzelashob. Maybe your older readers will give gift subscriptions to their children and grandchildren to make their future retirements much more comfortable. A special thank you to those of you who tipped your hat to these columns in particular. Not only do you provide useful information, but you help also provide discussions between spouses when we might be inclined to remain silent, says Dave Lee. Like social interaction, open communication is critical in retirement. Find that special someone to share it with, writes John Napo. Those of us with spouses and families whom we love are truly blessed. And we are out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us, and please be sure to listen to us again next time. On behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.